It was the dawn of the third age of podcasting, 12 years after the B5 premiere. The Babylon podcast was a dream given form, its goal to discuss Babylon 5 episodes, arcs, and implications, to interview the cast and crew about their experiences and memories. It's a home away from home for fanboys, geek girls, and lurkers. It can be a silly place, but it's our last best hope for B5 fans. This is the podcast about the story of the last of the Babylon stations. The year is 2006. The name of this show is the Babylon Podcast.
And welcome back to another Babylon Podcast. I am not Summer Brooks.
I'm not Summer Brooks.
But I am Summer Brooks, calling from North Hollywood, California tonight. And I feel great. wait, let's do this a different way. Maybe each one of us should just say, we'll all say that we're Summer Brooks, and you be Summer, and I'll... Summer, I'll tell you what, Summer.
I'll be Summer. This, oh,
like the Bruces.
That's it.
Yeah, there you go. Daryl, and my brother, Daryl.
What's your name? Michael. It's not Bruce? Nope. Oh, mine to be a bit confusing. Mind if we call you Bruce to keep things clear?
Yeah, let's see how many of your Norwegian friends remember that.
That's right. Well, Summer Brooks is in, she is in Austin, Texas, at World Fantasy. And we decided that we were going to have a all-testosterone B5 tonight.
Boys night out.
That's right.
That's right. Well, I think what we'll do is we'll clear out some of the voicemails that have been starting to pile up again. I think Summer won't mind.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get the Vorlon perspective on some of these. That should be interesting.
Let's just talk trash about Summer all night.
Are you kidding? Because she could kick all our asses.
And I bet you she's in the chat room listening to the live feed right now.
Oh, how embarrassing.
Yeah, so yeah. We've got to be careful about that.
Well, it's a shame that we do not have the lovely and talented Summer Brooks with us here. So.
She's the best. Why don't we just kiss her ass for the next hour?
It's either kissing ass or getting ass kicked. What's your preference, guys?
I'm good with kissing.
Yeah, me too.
She comes into the studio every week. I have to be nice.
That's right. That's right.
She'll hurt me.
Oh, yes.
Well, all right, so it's going to be all guys. Let's talk about guy stuff. I mean, let's just get into it. Like cool guy stuff. Like, I don't know of any show that, you know, made a better use of a motorcycle than Babylon 5. And I can't think of any time in any other show that I don't even know what to tell you about that whole sex scene Ivanova had with the, what was the name of that race? Lunani?
Oh, the Lumati.
Lumati, right.
Oh, yeah. You know, no, that went to the spank bank for me.
That was, yeah, exactly. And that whole Talia bedroom wolf.
Right. And let's be honest. Let's go almost toward the end of the show when Captain Walkley came on board. I think they looked for as many excuses as possible to have her in her underwear.
Ooh. I'm looking forward to the last season.
you should be at this point. And then there was, of course, the whole autoerotic hologram thing that had her in her
I wish you could have been there for that.
See, now that's the thing that always got me about the holodecks and the holograms and, crossing genres on Star Trek and B5 and all
right.
This other stuff. There's all this great technology. Wouldn't you just spend all of your time in the porn room?
Have you ever...
I mean, really?
Scott Adams in his book, The Dilbert Principle, has a chapter on why the future will not be like Star Trek.
Okay.
And one of the things he talks about is the transporter, and amongst other things, he talks about having a transporter would allow you to beam cheerleaders into your house. So you'd have no reason to leave the house.
That gives a whole new, boy, that gives a whole new perspective on the escort service, doesn't it?
Babylon 5 at least had the good decency to be upfront about who was doing whom and not pretending it was holodeck fantasies or whatever else.
There you go.
Yeah.
Hey Tim, what episode was Scott in?
He was in a fourth season episode, and I am trying to remember what it is now.
He just did the one little episode.
Yeah, at the very beginning, Garibaldi has set himself up in his little personal private eye business, as it were. And Scott Adams is there. And if I recall correctly, his girlfriend was in a Minbari makeup behind him.
Oh, that could be right. Yep,
and he was talking to Garibaldi about, you know, Mr. Adams is there. He's talking with Mr. Garibaldi about finding his dog and his cat. And Garibaldi's taking notes, and he's saying, yeah, okay, what about him? And he leans over conspiratorially and says, they're planning to take over the world.
Wait a minute. Isn't that Pinky in the Brain?
Well, no, he's referencing Dogbert and Catbert at that point.
Gotcha.
From Dilbert strip, and it is really a riot.
That's great.
And there's a couple Dilbert strips I remember when I think the pointed hair boss has asked Dilbert to do a presentation, but don't offer up any, you know, information that could be detrimental to the company. So Dilbert, in front of all the CEOs and everything and all the PowerPoint slides, is saying, there's too much spoo in my flarn. And unless you're a Babylon 5 fan, that's just gibberish.
Too much spoo in my flarn. Wow. That's good stuff.
So,
did you ever see the episode of Drew Carey's show when they wore the Narn mask?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, I think. Wow, this is going back. I'm just flashing on this. I don't remember if it was Drew or if it was Ryan Stiles. One of the two of them was. I think it was Drew that was a real B5 fan, and they worked a Narn mask into one of their episodes.
Oh, that's funny. Carey. I'll have to look for that.
Wow.
Yeah.
And
I was also watching Futurama the other night. There's the episode where Leela goes to Nibbler's homeworld, and I'm certain that it was done as an homage to Babylon 5, because when she's brought in front of the High Council of the Nibblers, it's like the Grey Council chambers in B5. They're all sitting in these pools of light, and they're all wearing gray hoods, and there's no background except this dark expanse behind them, and oh, it's perfect.
Wow, we could do an entire show on just cross media of B5.
Yeah, trying to find the homages, yeah.
We should. There were a lot of fun cross promotion things and scary tactics that we tried early on. We had all kinds of radio hosts from around the country for the first couple seasons that, you know, when they were trying to get the word out and create buzz within the local markets where the show was airing in syndication. There was just a whole campaign where local DJs would come and we would dress them up as aliens for a day. And in some cases they'd get, you know, a line or two, or maybe they wouldn't. And we had one of my childhood radio heroes, Cousin Brucey from New York, was a commander of some ship. I don't remember what episode that was either. It's all such a blur, but yeah, we were always kind of into that. So you're right. If we could just do our homework on that to figure out who the guru was that really knew their stuff and could remember all that, that would be a great conversation to have.
Jeffrey, what was probably the most outlandish or outrageous attempt that you made to get this show publicity?
Me personally?
No, just generally speaking. I mean, when you're all sitting around in the production meeting thinking, what can we do to get the word out? And somebody came up with X, and everybody was like going, oh my God, that's just so far out, we have to do it.
Truth is, Tim, that wouldn't have happened in that kind of situation. Most of the publicity efforts were handled by Warner's publicity, and then finally, I guess whatever that was, maybe I guess I was going into season 5, or maybe it was 4, when we started to have our own publicity people. I think that was 5, though, when we went to TNT. Most outrageous thing, I got to tell you, we sure did get a big kick out of the Drew Carey thing. That's why I mentioned it before, is having having the Narn walk around on Drew Carey's show, and it was a big hit.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you from personal experience, though, one of the wackiest and rarest things that ever happened for me was also part of the TNT Blitz. They flew me and I think one of Optic Nerve's guys, Jerry Gergely, went with me. I think it was Jerry and I flew to Newport, Rhode Island for a cable industry trade show convention conference thing that was taking place in Newport. And they flew the Kosh costume there. That was the first time I think the Kosh costume ever left the building other than to go back and forth between the studio and Optic Nerve. And it got packaged up and we flew it all the way to Newport and I stood in that silly costume at a conference with a bunch of businessmen who didn't know jack about what Babylon 5 was, but that was the whole deal. I was also there with Scooby-Doo. In fact, I have pictures.
No way.
Kosh and Scooby-Doo, and Scooby absolutely bowing because he realized he was in the presence of Kosh, and he knew that was serious shit.
Oh, wow.
Like, Scoob, it's a Vorlon.
I have those photos, and if you guys remind me, I will make that available to Summer because that is some funny damn stuff, and that is a story that hasn't been told. Kosh and Scooby-Doo in Newport, Rhode Island.
Wow, that's great.
You know, there were all those Scooby-Doo series where they had the guest appearances with Sonny and Cher and the Harlem Globetrotters, and I think Batman and Robin. But you know what? That I would love to see that episode, the Scooby-Doo episode with Kosh. That's scary on so many levels. Jeff, I had another question for you. Since we're talking about guy stuff, let's talk about smashing things apart. it occurred to me watching Geometry of Shadows where you've got... Okay, let's take a step back. You're working on a show like Babylon 5. You've got a very limited budget. You're trying to do the most you can on a shoestring. And you've got a set like the Zocalo. It's fairly expansive. And then the script rolls in, and it calls for 20 Drazi to smash the place up. How do you approach that kind of a problem?
Well, you know, that's actually a wonderful question that we should address again with John Iacovelli when we have him back on the show again.
Okay.
Because that was all him and his department, how they retrofitted some of the elements, and they also worked carefully with Kerry Russell, who was our stunt coordinator, because they would plan different gags. So, for example, I the thing that immediately popped into my sketchy memories was that there was a storefront in the Zocalo that didn't normally, if I recall this right, didn't normally have glass in the window, like in the showcase, in the, you know, the display window.
Right.
But we suddenly added it for that episode, specifically for the purpose of, you know, we called it candy glass.
Candy glass, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So that we could throw some Drazi through the glass. I seem to recall that's that episode. And a lot of the what we call hero elements of any set, the pieces that were one of a kind or perfect that we use all the time, they made you know replicas, breakable replicas and stuff like that. So that, you know, those were the kinds of things that they would do. But again, just to be, if you want to get into specifics, Tim, we should add that to the long growing list of questions we want to ask some of our guests when they come back to visit us.
Okay, not a problem. We'll say that.
Wow. See, that's a problem with what I do. I just don't have a chance to set stuff up to destroy it and break it. That's what's missing in my life. No smashing.
Hulk well, then smash. You can't be part of this conversation. This is guys only, and only guys really do smashing stuff.
That's true.
Yeah. Although girls are pretty good about smashing hearts, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although I think Summer could smash some boards. I think she's probably good at that.
Brains, beauty, and brawn all in the same package. Get out of town, huh?
Mm-hmm.
I know it. So everybody be nice this summer. Go run out and buy, So Say We All, the Ben Bella Pop Smart book on Babylon 5.
Thank you. Yes, indeed. That's exactly right. Summer's got a really nice little submission in there, and it's featured on the back cover.
Really?
Yeah, she's got one of the pull quotes off the back cover. She was also geeked and psyched about that. That was really cool.
How about this? Great. Well, that's a good segue, because one of the things that she mentioned in correspondence with me is that in talking with the people at Ben Bella, she's trying to push interest in getting them to publish a Babylon 5 Pop Smart book.
Mm-hmm.
So we're putting the call out to all the Babylon podcast listeners. Either leave us a comment on the website or go to the Babylon podcast forum on the Cult of Summer website and just simply leave a note that says, yeah, I'd like to see this. I'd like to buy a copy if it comes out. And the idea is it's not so much we're putting together a petition, but at least we use that to show the people at Ben Bella that there is interest in such a book.
Oh, definitely. If there's a market for it, you can put a few thousand people together that say, yeah, I'd buy this if it was published. Yeah, somebody will pay attention to that.
Now, I was in Barnes & Noble, unfortunately, with $0 in my wallet, but found the Star Trek Pop Smart book that was out there. And I've been a Star Trek fan for a long time, and I've read a fair amount of the, you know, making ofs and all that kind of stuff. So I kind of picked it up with a little bit of trepidation. And I tell you what, I was very impressed with the level of writing, because it wasn't simply just a rehash of all the stories that had already been told. There was some very new and fresh perspectives on Star Trek. So I imagine that Babylon 5 would get the same treatment.
Yeah, very cool. You know what? I actually have a question for you, Tim. You know the Star Trek technical manuals on the Enterprise and a lot of the things inside of the universe there, where it gets into the gory little details, really cool geeking stuff. Does B5 have a technical manual?
It seems to me, and I'm almost embarrassed to admit it, I know there was one that was out there. I don't have a copy. From what I recall, Summer, I'm sure, has got a copy and would be able to tell us better. The thing is, the difference is that with Babylon 5, it never really had shows predicated on that level of technobabble.
Right, right. And that's what I've been noticing through the first season going through it, is that there's not a lot of... The station itself is not such a character in the show as much as the characters in the show.
Right, exactly. It's more backdrop, where the Enterprise is very much a character in the Star Trek shows. The Babylon station is the setting for what goes on. And really, because of how JMS has plotted the whole thing, and Nuri was going from point A to point B to point C, all the drama is generated by the character interaction.
Mm-hmm.
You very rarely have the situations where, you know what, we're stuck in this, and you know what, all we have to do, if we could just figure out how to fix the double talk generators, we'd get out of it. Or if we get the super duper mega crystals polarized properly, it'll coat the hull, and then everybody's mutations will reverse. You know, it was never about that, and the few weak episodes that the show has generally are ones that are kind of like that. Infection, which I'm sure you've seen at this point, Mike.
Mm-hmm, yes.
That's basically that kind of a story, and you can see how poor it is, because it just doesn't, the Babylon 5 universe isn't about that kind of thing.
Yeah, I've noticed that, and it took me several episodes before I really gained the appreciation of the size of the ship and the fact that it's a rotating tube, and everybody's living on the inside of the rotating tube, and that's how they're making their gravity. And I'm kind of gleaning this stuff out of the episodes and all the digital stuff that's happening behind the scenes. But nothing's really being brought up to the front for me to say, this is what the ship is, this is what's happening inside. I shouldn't call it a ship, station, sorry. The station is, and, you know, this is how it survives, how it keeps going. This is the processes and all the technical data that keeps this thing running. And I'm actually wanting more of that.
Actually, I have recollection that there indeed was a technical guide that was published. That would have been end of season 3, maybe, is when that was in happened. Maybe it was the very beginning of 4, but I think it was season 3 is when that was coming. That's out. I'm pretty sure that does exist. If I'm wrong about that, it might have been incorporated into another book, but I have every reason to think that there was.
Yeah, I think you're right, Jeffrey. I think there was a separate technical manual. And unfortunately, like a lot of Babylon 5 material like that, it was so hard to find and get a hold of or even know that it existed. You know, if there was, in terms of the show, if there was one drawback to the fact that it flew under the radar like it did, is that for fans like, Summer, because she was so dedicated, I'd love to take a peek at her collection. But it wasn't the kind of thing where you could pop down to the mall, into the bookstore, and you'd find the Babylon 5 section there next to the Star Trek and Star Wars books. You really had to go digging and finding, and if you weren't that dedicated, you never knew that it was out there.
Hmm.
Well, because the show wasn't popular at that point. It still wasn't mainstream. It never amassed a viewing audience to support that level of merchandising until it got to TNT, when it was on at a regular time for everybody to see and could cohesively bring an audience together.
Well, so, that's what I was going to say. It seemed like the damn studio was going out of their way to come up with new ideas on how to kill this show before it ever got its legs underneath of it. Because, I mean, even when I was trying to watch the second season, because they never aired the first season where I was, I got in at the second season. I watched a few shows. They moved the time around every single week. Well, it could be on Thursday night at 8, and then the next week it'd be on at Friday at 4, and then it'd be on Sunday at 2 o'clock in the afternoon for a while, and then they'd move it to midnight for a while. And you never knew when the damn show was coming on.
Right, but that wasn't the fault of the studio. That's the fault of the television station that you were watching it.
Right, exactly. But I mean, even it just seemed like it was always kind of that really cool thing I'd love to watch, but it was so evasive, I could never really lock it down to where I could get into it.
I have a very vivid memory of being physically ill in a hotel in Orlando and being unable to sleep and finding Babylon 5 at 3 a.m. on a local affiliate there.
Yeah, exactly.
And that helped ease the symptoms a little bit, but it was, I'm like, you know, part of me was really extremely happy to find it, and then the other part of me is like going, other than people who are puking their guts out, who is up watching this at this hour?
Exactly.
Now, to your other point, Mike, regarding the station and how it's portrayed on the show, I think if there was any one thing that the limitations of budget and or special effects were a detriment to the show, was that you never got that sense of the station itself. It's really the only time you really get a sense of the size of the interior is in Fall of Night. I won't spoil anything for you, but just suffice to say there's...
Are you kidding? I listen to the deep geeking things while I'm editing this. I already know every ass. It's kind of weird. In retrospect, I'm watching these shows and I remember the deep geeking sessions and I'm going through there going, oh yeah, that's right. Oh yeah, that's right. Oh yeah, that's right. And it's not hurting me. It's not hurting the story.
Okay. Well, let me say this then. There's a scene where Sheridan finds himself making an emergency exit out of the core tram,
mm-hmm.
and they're trying to figure out how they can save him because he's in a zero gravity environment at the core of the station, but because he's put himself in motion, he's starting to fall. Now, he's got some time, but they're trying to figure out what can we get people in jetpacks to him. So at that point, you get a sense of exactly what the interior of the station is like. But even still, I mean, there's you look out. I mean, it took me a while looking out Sheridan's window to realize I wasn't looking at a painting, but it was the idea that I'm looking out into the interior of this huge space station.
Okay, I'm jazzed on 2 points right there. Inertia actually exists in the Babylon 5 world. And the fact that zero G actually works, that there's actually zero G inside of a ship. Wow.
I'm
impressed.
I've read a couple places online, you know, some fan sites, and there are people who truly consider Babylon 5 to be the first true science fiction show to be on television.
Mm.
And a lot of that is due to the fact that technology has shown, you know, obviously the Minbari and the Vorlons have more advanced technology, but Earth is shown as having, you know, okay, we've got to rotate sections of the ship or the station to create artificial gravity. We don't have grav plates or gravity generators.
Inertial dampeners.
Right, exactly. Structural integrity fields, none of that. You know, you've seen the Star Fury is in action, and it's all based on Newtonian physics, okay? I've got a vector, and if I want to change my vector, I have to apply thrust against that. You know, I don't come sweeping around in a giant curve.
Or the engine's on full, going into a parking orbit.
Right, exactly.
That one always torques me off to no end. They have to turn the engines off to slow down. Nah, don't work that way.
No. You have to turn your ship around.
That's right.
Yes, right. So,
Mike, just a little detail there. I'm pretty sure that Copeland and Straczynski would correct you and let you know that, in fact, there really wasn't zero G inside the station. There was a lower G that the closer you were to the center, the core, of the station, your G was lower. And the reason that Sheridan had to be saved was because he would plummet towards the outside and not just float freely. Yeah, exactly.
Because the gravity would overtake at some point, but if it's in the center, it's not being affected by the spinning, and you wouldn't be getting the centrifugal force.
Right. I'll tease you a little bit more, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tease you a little bit more about that. This is the last episode of the second season, okay? The Fall of Night. One word, kosh.
Okay.
Hey, Jeffrey, let me ask you this. And Mike, you sit there and go, la, 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 la.
La, la, la.
What was it like for you when you finally got to see what was inside the encounter suit?
I don't remember it being a huge shock because I had pretty much understood, you know, I think Joe had pretty much let me understand that it was much more of an energy being, you know, that it was an entity rather than a physicality. Right. So I think I was pretty clear on, and I guess I also, you know, it's not fair for me to say because I had the opportunity to see the, you know, the storyboards that would be, you know, drawn to lead up to what the final effects would be. So when you watch the whole process, you're somehow desensitized to the final response. But in fairness, where I truly always enjoyed was I would. Even though I would watch the shows over and over and over in their progression of being made, it was always a treat to be home and watch the show as it aired in its entirety, in its final cut version, with commercials, and because that's when it really was a TV show. Up until that point, it was like this, you know, it was like making 22 movies a year, you know. So,
Gotcha. Interesting.
I don't know. It was. I just don't. I don't remember. That is a funny sequence, though. In fact, we're going to have a guest on pretty soon, Kim Holly from our wardrobe department at Babylon 5. And when Kim and I have already been in talks about this, and we'll have her on real soon. I actually had hoped to have her for tonight, but because I knew Summer would have just strung my balls out. Oh my God! If I had had Molly on without having summer hair, that would have been bad. So
back to the smashing thing again. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So when Kim comes on, remind me about the Fall of Night, and we'll have Kim and I have a little discussion about Kosh in that sequence.
Okay. Great. Yeah.
There's a funny and embarrassing story, and I just know the podcast loves when I embarrass myself.
Yes, they do. Well, I tell you what, I'm watching the time here, and it looks like we've got about halfway through here. I've got a little tune. I got a musical interlude for you tonight that I'm going to throw
in. Is this like intermission?
This is intermission. That's right. That's right. If you've heard this before, feel free to go to the bathroom, get some popcorn, come on back.
I might do that. I might go get something to drink while this is playing, since I have heard it. But go ahead and hit it, maestro.
All right.
He's got the really big hair. He can bask in the glow of his groupies from homeworld and make them all follow command. He will use Mr. Morden to implement his evil plans. Never letting Jakar know he's got so much blood on his hands. Molare. Chicks, because where you've won, he's got six. Sometimes the station's the valley of heartaches and tears. And in the hustle and bustle, no sunshine appears. We could take refuge from all of the choices that bind us. If there were a way we could leave all the shadows behind us. Molare, oh, he sent a ray, you know that he doesn't care. Because he will be emperor.
Oh, that's so good stuff. That is good stuff.
Where did that come from?
That's Steven Nelson, I believe.
Right. He had sent us the voicemail with his story about running into Steven first. And if you recall that voicemail, he ended with like the first eight bars of Molare and faded it out. And I sent him an email, or I think we even said it on the show. It's like, Steven, don't tease us like that. And next day, that appeared at the Babylon Podcast Gmail account. So
that's fabulous.
It is good stuff. That's, thanks so much for that.
Fun. Hey, Steven, if you're listening, we implore you to do some more.
Yes.
Let's have the Delenn song and the Sheridan song and Sinclair. Go ahead and do the entire cast. That would be a right. You obviously, your head's in the right place, friend. And we recognize talent here at the podcast. And damn it, we want more.
We don't have it.
Yeah, we need all the help we can get. So come on, Stephen.
Let's see. What's the Kosh song going to be? Would that be to Tusk? Or would that be to...
Why don't you ask her what's going on?
That's it. That's it. It's to Tusk. Kosh is to Tusk.
Don't mess with the Vorlon.
Or wasn't there also the ZZ Top song, Tush?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about that one, too. But
that would
be
a good one, too.
Yeah, I'm thinking Tusk actually follows better, but who knows? We'll let Steven figure that one out.
Yeah, exactly.
And for what it's worth, going through the voicemails that we were sending, our very good friend Yarsto sent a Babylon 5 haiku.
Yes, he did. And it's good stuff.
Okay, well, he requested that we do not listen to it until it's played live. So I have no idea what he's... I just simply asked to make sure, if we need to do a Claudia Christian disclaimer.
No. Actually, okay. I've listened to it, so I'm going to move it to the end just to torture you. No.
Fair enough.
No, I'll play.
If that's the worst torture I get in my life, I'm doing pretty damn well.
Now we'll play it. Let's okay. Let's hear that.
Hi, Tim, Summer, and Jeffrey. This is Yarsto from the Netherlands and of the Dutch Channel podcast. I was trying to compose some B5 haiku in response to Summer's call for B5 poetry when I came up with something else. Somehow my inspiration took a left turn and I ended up writing Babylon Podcast haiku. Anyway, here it goes. Babylon Podcast. Tim and Summer, deep geeking, along with the fans. And to make sure Jeffrey doesn't feel left out, Jeff's shower curtain. Disturbing mental image. Vorlon bathroom scene.
Oh, that's good stuff.
It is possible that we have some of the most talented listeners of any podcast on the internet these days.
Oh, I've been talking to Yarsto, and Yarsto has actually come over to Slice of Sci-Fi after my invite, and I've got a couple things from him already. So,
I can't wait to hear those. Oh, good work, Yarsto. That really sets the bar high.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. So are we going to have a B5 poetry slam going here now?
If we get stuff in, we can put it out there. No problem whatsoever.
I tell you what, the poetry slam stuff is hot. So if you get to working up those poetry slams, I'll put something together for it.
Okay. Hey, well, we're open to anything. You know, of course, like with all things of the Babylon podcast, everything gets trumped by the fantastic interviews that Jeffrey lines up for us.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
So, yes. But bring it on. We will get to it. And like I said, you've got your work cut out for you, people.
This is Yarsto from the Netherlands and of the Dutch Channel podcast with another early response, this time to episode 39. In the interview, it came up that Londo describes his three wives as famine, pestilence, and death. As I discussed in the chat room at the time with Summer, that means Londo himself must be the fourth horseman of the apocalypse, war. Obviously, this fits in well with the role we see Londo play later on in the series. That also got me thinking to my second point, which is that when Londo describes his wives as three of the four horsemen of the apocalypse, he also mentions that their personalities could shatter entire planets. I find this an interesting parallel for the eventual fate of the Narn homeworld. In accordance with the Tim Calendar Good Guy Communication Protocol, established October 11, 2006, this message has no formal closure. Deal with it.
Oh, man, does he have your number?
That's good stuff.
That's delightful that he comes up with such a brain tease and you start thinking about it all heavy and then he just goes, oh yeah, well, whatever.
Right. Well, at least he recognizes the importance of the Tim Calendar Good Guy Communication Protocol.
Yeah. It's not very fun for me, actually, because I know someone will kick my ass and I have to be so politically correct to talk to you that...
What?
It's quite a challenge here.
Who are you and what have you done with Jeffrey?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, wow. This show, I don't know.
Well, he does make a very interesting point about Londo. I thought that was very insightful and something that I hadn't quite glommed onto.
That's a head scratcher.
All the many times. Yeah, no, he's got an excellent point there. And you know, the other thing that I noticed, I listened again to our interview with Peter Jurasik, and when he talks about Londo's wives, he slips into the Londo accent.
Oh, really?
Yes, because he starts talking, yeah, they're famine, pestilence, and death. Yes, he doesn't know it, but he still has it. And there was a couple other instances where, just kind of a little bit of Londo peeked out there. It was a lot of fun. Oh, what a great interview that was.
Well, the interviews, it's interesting because I watch these characters now, and I keep going back to the interviews, and I'm listening to the way they speak and their role, and it doesn't quite match the interview. It's kind of surreal.
They call that acting, Mike.
Yes, yes. I'm aware of this acting thing.
We've had this conversation. If it's in color and on television, it's true. We don't even need to go. You're like my kids. You're going to tell me that Yoda's a puppet. We all know that that's not true.
He's a Jedi master. What are you talking
exactly.
about?
Exactly. You want to talk about smashing? There's a battle. I'd like to see Summer take on Yoda.
Hmm. Mm.
Okay.
I was waiting for it.
I didn't want to disappoint.
Okay, moving on.
Since you ask for short voicemails, I will push a bar higher for Jasto. No hello and no intro. Frack it! This is an intro. I think I need to work on that. Anyway, as much as I like the great interviews and listener feedback, could we please move on with episode discussions? I'm starving to rewatch the episodes, but I want to do it in sync with your geeking around. Maybe splitting the show into interviews plus episode discussions and a separate listener feedback show, just like the podcast which shall not be named due its explicit nature, would give us the time to get more episode discussions done. As one of the legendary first ones in the chat room, I'm going to make Kosh lives harder by annihilate much, much, much tequila tonight. Guess that will get his attention. But wait. I'm one of the first ones, just like him. I'm not one of the pebbles. I don't need to play tricks on him. I could just call him.
Oh, it doesn't sound like there's any tequila left after that one.
Well, as we've discussed before, the likelihood of doing a separate listener feedback show is the probability is so close to zero that it's not worth enumerating it out because, the quantum level, it's all a matter of probabilities. But anyways, it's a matter of time, people, and as we know, and I will get serious here, Jeffrey has done a great job getting all these wonderful interviews lined up. And at that point, if he's got them to come, we're going to talk to the people because the actors and the crew are all very busy people, and if they are generous enough to take time out of their schedule on any given Wednesday night, then by God, we're going to set aside whatever we might have had planned to be able to talk to these people. So
that's right. Can I get a harumph? Well, harumph, harumph.
Right. I mean, I'm very honored that people are love the deep geeking, because I know if it was just me and Summer in a room, we could go on forever and ever. And the fact that people like hearing what we have to say is just really great. But we'll get to it, people. We'll get through it all.
That is a good point. This is not the first time we've heard that. And, we perhaps can make a little more diligent effort to make sure that we intersperse, deep geeking with, interviews so that, at least within the course of a month, there's a fair mix to keep. You can't keep all the people happy all the time, but damn it, you can try.
Hey, I think we got a good mix going here. So, I think you're right. It's just, get the guests and then do the deep geeking in between, and everything's going to balance out just fine.
Two words, green, purple.
Green, purple.
Yeah, you don't know yet. You'll get there.
Okay.
Five words. When you're hungry, you're hungry.
Right. Exactly right.
Actually, I am hungry. Let's get this other one done. I'm going to go eat.
This is Jasto from the Netherlands and of the Dutch Nail podcast with another response to episode 38. Sorry for going all Mark from Memphis on you guys, but well, it happens. Now to get to the point, I listened to the final version of episode 38 today, And something struck me while you were discussing the nine fighters. Jakar actually tells them to stay together and get to the jump gate, but they break to delay the shadows anyway. That makes them the first people to tell, or rather show Jakar, that some must be sacrificed if all are to be saved. Have a Marvy day.
Oh, man.
I don't know what the equivalent of Dutch country music would be.
I have no idea. That's, you know what? Yeah. Yes, I do. I might have some, too.
No, I'm scared now. But he makes a really good point.
Yeah?
And gets, you know, again, that touches on the layers and dominoes that JMS sets up early on that you can come back after you've seen the whole show and you look back at it and go, oh, this was foreshadowing, or oh, this points to that, but you know, nobody was in a place to understand it or see it yet. So yeah, it's
that depth of writing really, I don't know if it exists anymore, if it ever existed.
Well, you're seeing it in you know, shows like Battlestar Galactica, and we saw it in Firefly.
Oh, yeah, in Firefly.
I can speak to, you know, and I think Heroes is the same thing. What I think is going to be interesting to see, and for my money, this is where Babylon 5 stands apart, is that there was a plan, a five-year plan, comrade, where there was a beginning, a middle, and an end, and there was a story that was to be told. And so far, even though there is definitely a linear progression in shows like Battlestar and shows like Heroes, I don't necessarily get the sense that there is a logical end to the story. Or to put it another way, that if the show continues to prove to be popular, that Sci-Fi Channel would say, keep giving us more, even though you might have told your story. If you understand the difference, you know, and then it comes to, well, you know, your ratings are slipping, so we're going to wrap this up. This is your last year. You know, Babylon 5 needed its 5 years to tell its story.
Yeah.
And it got it. And then after that fifth year, we were done. You know, told the story I wanted to tell. Thank you very much. It's been a great ride. We're going to go on to the next thing. And, you know, in this case, it was the star-crossed crusade, but we're also going to be getting the Lost Tales. So there's more in the universe to come, but that story was told. And I that to me is the thing that sets it apart, is because it takes guts to put a show together that automatically tells you when it's going to be over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know? I agree with that.
So,
I thought on Guys Night Out we were going to talk about the roundness of Dodger's butt, or maybe that what was that reporter Musanti that took her clothes off. I thought we were going to do stuff here.
Well, we could talk about that. There's your
what
Star
episode
Trek
is that?
Reference.
Hang on, I got my pen.
Voices of Authority. That's a third year episode.
Oh, okay. Summer, I need the third year.
Just even that one episode, there's a great scene where basically Julie Musante, this isn't going to spoil a whole lot for you, Mike, you're still going to love it when you get to it, but she is political officer assigned to Sheridan, and she's basically a tool of, you know,
she's basically a tool.
Well
I was going to say, wait a minute, naked chick, there's no spoiling. That's just it.
Well,
yeah,
well
no
at one point,
there.
A holographic Ivanova kind of pops up and you know,
spoils
throws
it
off track. Yeah, to a certain extent. And anyways, as Sharon is talking with Ivanova, this holographic projection of Ivanova, you know, they're exchanging vital information, and then finally she looks at him and says, good luck, Captain, you're about to go boldly go where everyone has gone before.
Is that the future equipment equivalent of accidentally thinking your mother at the wrong time or something like that?
You know, and then another point where Sheridan just kind of looks down, you know, Julian Assange's off screen, but he looks down and goes, huh, it's colder in here than I thought.
And then Garibaldi, he had Dodger and Grobos.
Well, almost. See, that was one of the things that he was griping about, is that he felt like his character was in a place where he wouldn't have Dodger and Gropo. So he was kind of, you know, she was putting the moves on him, and he was basically saying, no, I'm thinking about this old flame and blah, blah, blah. And
that's right.
Yeah.
Hmm. I'm going to do like this series.
You know, I'll say this. This is one of the things, that, again, another thing about Babylon 5 that was innovative is that the women were generally strong characters, but they were still women. You know, it wasn't as though they were either these feminine creatures that had no will or strength and then they were there to, you know, be looked at, nor were they basically men with breasts. You know, they were very much women, but they were...
Wait a minute.
You know, okay. Well, you know, I mean, you know...
I know what you mean. I know what you mean.
Yeah, I mean, you compare that to something like Star Trek, really. You know, for the most part, you know, and there are notable exceptions, but for the most part, the women were in nurturing women roles.
Hmm.
They were doctors or counselors or, you know, or whatever. You know, it's not really until Major Kira or Captain Janeway that you see them in positions of authority. And Babylon 5, you didn't have that. You know, the Minbari ambassador is Delenn. She's female. The second in command is Susan Ivanova, and she's going to kick your ass.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if there's any one character that you would call weak, it might have been Lita, or maybe Talia, because she's sort of the good girl who finds out that, you know, what she's believed has turned out to be much more sinister. But that's a whole other story. But having said that, you know, even the weaker characters grow to find their own strength. And it's just marvelous. It's different that way.
And so, see, that's one of my big things of whether or not a show excels beyond the average, and that's the journey of growth and seeing the growth in the characters. Because if a character doesn't grow in a film or in a series or whatever, I have a hard time with it. I have a hard time watching it.
Well, you are in for a treat, because really none of the characters, every character goes in a direction that you almost don't expect. And while it all makes sense in the story, it just kind of, you stop when it's all over and you look back and go, I cannot believe this guy started this place and ends up all the way over here.
Right. And it doesn't have to actually be, you know, it doesn't actually have to be growth. Let me qualify that, because I'm thinking of a couple other films where they actually devolved, and that was a lot of fun to watch too.
Well, it's
you know what, here's what I, you know what, this is the fun part about all the female characters, especially all the ones that just came on for an episode, you know, what we would call day players. One of the, for me, one of the selfish and fun parts was that most of the casting sessions were conducted in John Copeland's office, which was a nice, big, large office that was attached to my office. And during those casting sessions, the people would literally walk through my office to get to John's office. I got to see every hottie that the casting people brought in. So for every great one that you saw get on screen, there were half a dozen equally hotties that were going for the role. Some of them very notable, which I wouldn't be fair to mention, but an awful lot of them just up-and-comers that, wow.
Mm.
I'd do anything for this role, Mr.
So
Willard.
I would always have my little vote, you know. I would always go, yep, nice, that would be the perfect one for this show.
Someday you'll have to tell us about those secret second chance casting calls that you conducted.
That's right. I'd do anything to be on the show, Mr. Ziller.
Oh, really?
I really should have exploited that more. Missed opportunity, I guess.
That's right.
It's one of those things when you're 70, you're
bottling and feeling your memories.
Yeah, that's one of those memories when you're 70. You just sit around and kick yourself in the butt for going, yeah, morals. Would they get me?
Right.
And here's another little, you know, and this has got honest truth too. The crew on Babylon 5, everybody was, we had, and that was not by design. That was just by pure chance. It was a, all the women on Babylon 5, all, and I mean all the women on Babylon 5, were terrific, terrific, terrific women. So it was good to be the Borla.
More images of shower curtain, yeah.
Well, guys, believe it or not, we made it through an entire hour.
Wow.
Can
you believe that? We're done with voicemail. We got we don't have any time. We're up to an hour already.
So we're gonna get in trouble with Summer if we go longer.
Well, you'll get in trouble with me. I'm actually the stern timekeeper around here. So
keep it under
60 minutes, guys. I know everybody likes the long shows, but we gotta keep them under 60.
No. That's okay.
Keep them 50 meg files away. Those make for really tough downloads.
Right. Well, I guess this is the point in time where we tell people that you can get in touch with the Babylon podcast. You can leave a message, a comment on the website or in the forum, or you can email us at babylonpodcast@gmail.com. Or you can leave a voicemail for us. You could do what Yarstow does, which is to record a audio file and then email it to us. Or you can call our hotline, which is 206.
The year of the Great War.
He jumped the gun.
Did I do that right?
What's up for you?
Was that the right time?
No.
Did I do it right? No. Okay,
no.
I'm sorry.
You got the right words, but not at the right time.
Okay.
I'll cue you.
Try again? Okay, ready? Okay, voicemail line, 206-338.
You missed your cue. Damn it.
Okay.
Are we going to have to put tape on the floor for you?
Take three.
Okay, ready? Yeah, you know the number.
Yeah.
Call us.
For a really good time, call 1-800-CALL-SUMMER.
Okay, and with that, thanks, boys. This was fun.
Yes, it was. We're sorry, Summer. We really are.
We really are, Summer. We're so sorry we trashed your show while you were gone.
Hope you have fun in Austin and don't, or wherever you're going, and don't think too much about this.